This is HPR episode 2064 entitled, Test Driving the Mulan. It is hosted by Frank Bell and is about 20 minutes long. The summary is, Frank Bell takes the Mulan beater out for a spin.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, this is Frank Bell, and today I want to talk briefly about test driving Debian. Debian is a fork of Debian. It's spelled Debian, but I understand the canonical pronunciation. It's Debian. It's a result of Debian's decision to implement systemd. Back in January of 2014, Debian announced that it was moving from System 5, sometimes referred to as SysV, to SystemD for an init system. The reasons for doing this were basically that SystemD they found more reliable and more orderly on startup. This caused a great deal of consternation within the Debian community. The decision to switch to systemd was reached only after a long and, I gather from reading about it, though I was not part of it, contentious discussion. Opposition to systemd seems to spring from a couple of primary thrusts. One is that, contrary to the Unix tradition of having a program that does one thing and does it well, systemd is a program that does many things. When your OS starts using systemd, systemd doesn't just start up processes and then gracefully go away. It's always there managing stuff. Now, I'm not an expert in systemd or in init systems. This is, again, my restatement of stuff that I heard when the controversy was fresh. I will include some links in the show notes to articles about this particular discussion. So that's one argument against systemd. Another argument against systemd was that systemd is a binary. Unlike traditional Unix and Linux startup systems, it does not rely on a series of scripts which are executed and then, once they've done their job, gracefully exit. In order to manage systemd, users need to learn a new command set and new syntax. This caused much wailing and gnashing of teeth. Another argument against systemd tend to be based on personality. Systemd was created by Leonard Pottering, who some of you may remember was also the father of Pulse Audio. And when Pulse Audio was introduced some years ago and adopted by the early adapters within the Linux distribution community, it tended, so I've heard, not to work, or not to work properly, and generally be uncooperative. Again, I never personally have encountered that in distros I have used that employed Pulse Audio, but I'm not really an audiophile. Most of the stuff I listen to is voice. Mr. Pottering does not seem to be very popular with a lot of persons. He is, by all accounts, a genius with code. I have heard him interviewed. He's quite personable and almost self-effacing in an interview. You can look back amongst, I believe it was the Linux Voice podcast. They had an interview with him a year or a year and a half or so ago. But he does seem to rub lots of people the wrong way. And I have to say, I think some of the opposition of Systemd was not based on the merits of Systemd so much as on personal dislike of the creator. I'm not making a judgment here, but that's what I have observed. And the third thrust of the criticism, one that seems to come right out of the farthest reaches of conspiracy theory, is that Systemd is part of an effort on the part of Red Hat to reduce the rest of the Linux distributions to subservience. That I find ludicrous. Red Hat has contributed mightily to the Linux community. It was indeed one of the founders of the Linux community, along with Debian and Slackware. Those are the three named distributions that still exist today. And my own take of it is that Red Hat is interested in the well-being of Red Hat. They're not looking to conquer Linux distributions. They're looking to conquer the enterprise, and that their main competition is not from other Linux distributions, as from certain computer operating systems that tend to be headquartered in the state of Washington in the United States. So that's my take on the origins. As I said, I will include links to some articles about the controversy. Shortly after Debian made its announcement, and as a footnote, at the time Debian made this announcement, I was running Debian on one of my computers, the computer that at the time I used as my home file server. That computer now has happily gone to the great recycling place in the sky after many years of devoted service, and running Debian quite happily. In fact, my two favorite distributions are Slackware and Debian. I was running at the time Debian testing, and it ran quite happily until Debian pushed out Systemd in the testing and they broke my server. Now, that had nothing to do with the merits of Systemd. I had set my Debian machine to boot to the command line, as all good computers should do, using a little program called sysv.rc.conf. And with sysv.rc.conf, you could tell the computer to boot into the traditional run level 3 with no X running. Historically, Debian and Debian derivatives treat run levels 3 through 5 all as the same run level and boot into a display manager, and then when you log in directly into X. Once Debian pushed out Systemd in testing, my computer would boot to the command line. I would log in, and then a display manager would start. I'd have to log in again. And I said, to heck with this, and I put Slackware on the machine, because I just didn't want to deal with it at the time. But I have always liked Debian. I like the stability. That probably has something to do with the fact that I also like Slackware. I much prefer stable over bleeding edge. Anyway, shortly after Debian announced the move to Systemd, a movement developed to fork Debian to a distro that used the traditional sysv init. A formal announcement of that fork was made in November of 2014 with the goal of having a beta late the next spring. That did not happen. An alpha was pushed out somewhere last year. I happened to be carrying on a conversation on some forum with someone who had been using Debian since the alpha and said it had performed well for him. But I, at that point, since I was not really following the news, lost track of the story until the Register carried a story in late April of this year saying that a beta of Dev1 had been released. That caught my curiosity, and I decided I'd take it out for a spin. So I downloaded the Dev1 DVD-sized installation program and loaded it up into VirtualBox. I installed it in VirtualBox on a couple of different computers, and I installed it several times simply to try out some different combinations. Also, for the purpose of recording this podcast, I downloaded the current Debian release and installed it to a VM because I noticed some things in the Dev1 installation routine that had not been present the last time I had installed Debian several years ago. I will not go into the details of the installation routine. It's fairly straightforward stuff. You pick your language, you pick your keyboard, you get the prompt Debian used to have also about whether or not you want to participate in their popularity contest to keep track of which software packages are most popular. And as is the case with Debian, the answer defaulted to no, which I find quite courteous. Comparing the installation processes for the two distributions, Debian Jesse and Dev1 Jesse Beta, as they call it, they are step by step the same. Now, I do note, considering how relatively new it is, that Dev1 seems to have a fairly good network of mirrors around the world based on the menu selection presented for mirror selection during the install process. I am certain it is nowhere nearly as extensive as Debian's, but it seemed to have pretty good geographical coverage around the Earth. One thing I noticed that I had not seen before in a Debian install was after the base system was installed and the time came to select your software. Now that step I recall from earlier versions of Debian, and the choice would be, say, web server, SSH server, basic tools with basic tools defaulted. Now there was an addition. In addition to web server, print server, a couple of other selections, you had a choice of desktops. And this was the case in both Dev1 and Debian. You could choose from among the Debian default desktop, which still is GNOME 3, KDE, LXDE, XFCE, Mate, Cinnamon. Instead of having the default, and then if you want something else, you'd have to go out and get it, you could pick something other than the default at that point. You can even choose to install multiple environments and then switch back and forth between them from the session chooser at the login screen. And I both installed the default desktops, which for Dev1, by the way, is not GNOME 3. This I consider a point in Dev1's favor, but is XFCE. I installed both of them with various multiple desktops. I did a combination of Mate and KDE on the one Dev1 install. I did GNOME 3 and XFCE on a Debian install, and they work just fine. But here's a little thing. If you pick two desktop environments that each come with their own display manager, say as GNOME comes with GDM and KDE comes with KDM, both display managers, after you pick your desktops, the install program will prompt you to pick which display manager you want to use. I would say this, and I did run into this issue. I picked SLIM, S-L-I-M. I think that stands for Simple Linux Manager or something of that nature. I believe it's the one that comes with LXDE. If you're installing multiple desktops, I would not recommend SLIM. Now, this is in a virtual machine, so the experience on bare metal may be different, but with Slim, I could not find a session chooser. So if I had installed, say, LXDE and XFCE and the Slim Display Manager, once I got to the login page, I could not find a way to change my choice of desktops. And I clicked everywhere there was to click and tabbed everywhere there was to tab. I did not have this problem if I chose KDM or GDM. And really, I don't have strong feelings about display managers. I don't get worked up about having pretty wallpaper there, because what are you going to do? You're going to log in and you're going to go off and do whatever you signed on to the computer to do in the first place. It's just like it's a garage door opener for your computer. And once your car is in the garage or out of the garage, whichever way you're going, who cares? But that I found interesting. And it's interesting, too, that you get this choice on desktops in both Debian and Deb1. I also found this, and this was true with both Debian and Deb1. If you choose the plain text install rather than the graphical install, that's a poor choice, because the color choices for the display dialogues put difficult-to-read colors. If you have you highlight your language as English, or it defaults to English, it's going to be light white letters on a red background. And it's very difficult to read what the highlighted or selected item is. You have to cursor off it, oh, that's English, and cursor back up to it and proceed. So I would recommend, unless you have particularly sharp eyes, I would recommend using the graphical installation routine. Now, both of these, when I installed, they included LibreOffice, the GIMP, a full suite of programs. The default web browser was IceWeasel. I understand that IceWeasel will ultimately be going away, that the branding dispute between Debian and Mozilla, which led to Debian's rebranding Firefox as IceWeasel, has been resolved, and IceWeasel will at some future time go back to being Firefox. I have no idea when that will be. I did note that the text browser that comes pre-installed on Deb1 is W3M. Which quite tickled my fancy. I do like W3M, but normally if you have a pre-installed text browser, it's going to be Lynx or Lynx, L-Y-N-X or L-I-N-K-X. Anyway, I've been using now Deb1 regularly, still in a virtual machine, but using it regularly for some of the tasks I do, and it has performed quite nicely. Nothing I have tried to do has given me any indication that this is a beta program still in testing. The things I've tried to do have all worked flawlessly. It is, in short, a nice piece of work for all that it was nearly a year behind schedule. Will it catch on? Frankly, I don't think it will. For one thing, systemd has something going for it. Systemd, whatever you think of its philosophy, works. I have a friend named Mark Davis. Several years ago, I actually interviewed him for a podcast here at HPR. Mark is a longtime Linux sysadmin. Before that, he was a Unix sysadmin. But he says systemd works very nicely. He can tell that the system with the systemd start efficiently and smoothly. The only problem he's mentioned to me is that when systemd breaks, it's more difficult to diagnose what the problem is. And that's because he knows how to diagnose system anything using System 5. He's been doing it for years. He's got to learn how to diagnose systemd. I've been using Magia on one of my computers for several years. It uses System D. It works fine. There have been no problems. So my personal opinion, as strictly an observer, is that by the time Dev1 is ready for prime time, it may be ready for prime time tomorrow, for all I know, based on the performance of the beta, a lot of the impetus that a year and a half ago created the controversy will have died out. And people will have moved on. Those people who are irrevocably hostile to systemd are already using Slackware. And I just don't think Dev1 will have the momentum to maintain itself as a project. I think that's a shame. That's just my opinion. I think they've done an excellent job of work there. And if you're curious about Dev1, certainly I'd urge you to give it a try, because it does work very nicely. Thank you very much. If you want to contact me, you can email me at frank@pineviewfarm.net, and my website is pineviewfarm.net. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.